Hello, welcome to The Law Report. I'm Damien Carrick. This week, libel tourism, the case of a US-registered company that's suing a UK-based blogger for defamation. And where has the claim been filed? The USA? No. The UK? No. The answer? The New South Wales Supreme Court. The defendant in this unusual litigation is a Mr. Bruce Everiss. He's the author of a popular blog called Bruce on Games.
I've been in and around the home computer and the video game industry since 1978, when I opened one of the world's first computer stores. And I decided to put all this down in a blog, mainly about the video game industry, but it's not from the point of view of a game player, it's from an industry point of view. Mainly marketing-based, news-based, management-based. It's about the industry, about making games.
And how many readers do you have, do you think?
Over 100,000 a month.
Do you have any connection to Australia?
Well, I've never physically been to Australia, but I'm a keen scuba diver, so I would dearly love to visit Australia. But as I say, I've never visited.
Do you know if you have a lot of readers in Australia?
I know the exact statistics. Because I write in English, my articles are mainly read in the English-speaking world, mainly in America. About 80-something percent of my audience is in America. And then in the UK, then in Canada, and then Australia comes fourth. And then there's a big jump down to the non-English-speaking world, and then I get Germany and so on. My blog is actually, over a few months, if I look at the statistics, is actually read in virtually every country in the world.
Now, legal action, defamation action, has been commenced against you in the Supreme Court of New South Wales, Sydney, Australia. Will that be easy for you to defend?
No, obviously not. Massively inconvenient. It's halfway around the world, isn't it? And there's an 11-hour or 10-hour time difference.
Bruce Everiss, speaking on the line from his home in the English city of Coventry. In September, US-registered company Evony commenced a defamation action in the New South Wales Supreme Court. Evony is an online real-time strategy game, which according to its press releases, has over 8 million players worldwide. Bruce Everiss's lawyer here in Australia is Damien Sturzacker, partner with Mark Lawyers in Sydney.
Evony's one of the more popular online games that has been around not for only a very short time, and it has a precept which sort of casts the game back in medieval times. Players compete to rise up through the various levels of Evony to obtain prizes and rewards within the game structure.
And I believe there are lots of buxom maidens in the mix.
Yeah, I mean, interesting. It's somewhat different to some of its competitors in that it does have this sort of buxom maiden sort of branding in both its advertising and less so in the actual content of the game, I'm told. But certainly the sort of pop-ups that people see in relation to the game carry these sort of the buxom maiden look.
Where is Evony based, the company?
Evony's a Delaware corporation. It was established only quite recently.
Delaware, a pretty small state on the east coast of the USA.
Exactly right.
Who owns Evony?
Well, we don't know. All that we know is that it's this Delaware corporation, or at least as the lawyers for Bruce, we're not sure.
Now, your client, Bruce Everiss, has got onto some very, very legal hot water, and he's made Evony very, very cranky. Evony says that your client, Bruce Everiss, has defamed the company. What sorts of defamatory statements do they say your client has made, and in what form?
The sort of allegations that are made in those proceedings are that Evony sends spam as part of its advertising, that it's associated with fraudsters, that it had stolen intellectual property rights of others.
Other game developers.
Of other game developers, etc. That the game itself is a game that is exploitative of its players.
How so? I mean, I think the allegation, as spelled out in the pleadings, is that it engages in, quote, the despised practice of gold farming. What is gold farming?
Yeah, so as I understand it, gold farming is this process by which, through the normal operation of a game, players are expected to undertake something called grind, which is essentially the hard work of winning up your way through various levels. What you can do, if you want to sort of take a shortcut, is essentially to purchase the right to move up to the next level. And so the allegation of gold farming is that by setting up a game which is free, ostensibly free to play, but by then offering these opportunities for people to purchase levels, the allegation is that what they're doing is trying to encourage people really to buy their way up through levels and then obtain money that way.
The pleadings also spell out some other allegations. What are they?
That there are other sort of computer malware viruses that can be downloaded from the game into your computer if you play the game.
Now let's get this straight. Bruce Everiss, he's tapping away at his computer somewhere in the UK, and Evony is based in Delaware, USA. Evony has brought defamation litigation proceedings in Sydney, Australia. Is that right?
That's exactly right. And, I mean, that's really what marks this case as quite an extraordinary case.
So is there any connection between the plaintiff and Australia or the defendant and Australia? What's being spelled out in the pleadings?
Really, in the way of connection, all that could be said is that here is a blog which can be read in Australia and here is a game which can be played in Australia. No one lives here, no one visits here. There is no other connection.
There is no special connection between Evony or Bruce Everiss and Australia, which makes it stand out in comparison with a bunch of other jurisdictions.
That's exactly right. I mean, the connections to Australia are no greater than they would be, say, with Romania.
So why do you think Evony has chosen to fight your client in Australian courts?
Obviously, I'm speculating because I'm not advising Evony as to their litigation strategy, but what I do know from previous experience is that Australian law is reasonably favourable, if you like, to the sort of the defamation tourist. So if you're looking to sue somewhere, then Australia, due to the way in which we deal with international cases, is a reasonably favourable jurisdiction.
How so?
Well, essentially it's because the way that Australian court looks at it is that it adopts a pretty simple approach. It says, look, if you come to our courts and ask us to deal with a case, the test that we apply is Australia a not inconvenient forum? And apologies for the double negative, but that's the way that the court test is set out. And it's a very high threshold for a defendant who's trying to say, look, I shouldn't be sued here, to try and discharge. So that's the role that we're performing for Bruce at the moment, is trying to discharge that obligation and say, look, he shouldn't be sued here, because, in fact, it is a very inconvenient forum. As you can imagine, Bruce not living here, not having any assets here, etc.
How is our jurisdictional test, that double negative, not an inconvenient forum, how does that differ from, say, the test in, for instance, the UK?
Yeah, well, see, in the UK, the approach is the more convenient forum. So all of a sudden, the court's mind is turned towards comparing what's the best place for a case to proceed. So if it's faced with a variety of jurisdictions such as the US, Australia and England, then the court will examine a comparison of those various jurisdictions as to what's the most appropriate place for the case to continue, allowing for not to put the plaintiff at what's described as a juridical disadvantage. So it's a much easier test for a defendant to say, well, look, you know, I'm being sued here in England. There were three or four readers of my newspaper, my blog, etc., whereas there were 100,000 in America. In those circumstances, if someone's going to sue me, it should be America.
That would be the most convenient forum.
Yeah, that's right. It's the more appropriate forum would be the US. Now, Australia, for quite some time, hasn't adopted that approach. And what it's meant is that Australian courts have been more attractive for some forms of litigation, this particular sort of tort-based litigation. So we're not just talking defamation, but we're also talking some personal injury cases. As long as you can show that you've suffered damage in the jurisdiction, or in this case, that the allegation is that the tort was committed here because it was downloaded here, and the Evony pleading says that one person read the publication. There may have been more, but at the moment there's just the one person who read it. And Evony says, that's enough. We should be allowed to sue here.
Now, there are other jurisdictional tests, or the tests which bring you within the scope of the jurisdiction. There's also, I guess, the defamation law itself. How does our defamation law differ from the defamation law, say, in other comparable countries like the USA?
Yeah, well, so, I mean, in relation to the USA, the availability of a constitutional protection of free speech usually means that cases like this really don't get to first base. So cases where someone is making a comment about a particular, particularly in this sort of case, a comment about a particular product, which is Evony, or a comment in relation to the conduct of a corporation, then you know, they need to think of Michael Moore, etc. Had Michael Moore directed all of his comments that he makes in relation to US corporations here in Australia, then he may well find himself sitting in a lot more courtrooms. So vastly a different regime here in Australia, not on the defamation front, really not much different to the UK. The sort of defamation law in the UK and Australia are substantially similar. There is an additional wrinkle here in relation to the Evony case, which is interesting because the one thing Australia has done with recent amendments is to make it more difficult for companies to sue for defamation. And interestingly, Evony is a company. Now, Evony says that it's a company with less than 10 employees, and that's the one exception for companies. Companies, if they've had less than 10 employees and they're not related to another company, then they can sue. And so the very interesting factual issue in this case is going to be, so Evony says it's a company of less than 10 employees, but it also says that it has a game which has 10 million people who play it. And again, it's going to be a matter for evidence, and I guess Evony will need to show that they do in fact have less than 10 employees.
Less than 10 employees in Australia or less than 10 employees worldwide? What's the test?
Worldwide. So we'll see. And as I said, the proceedings were only filed a month or two ago. They go to hearing on the 14th of December on this issue. So we'll see what Evony say and we'll see what the court says.
And on the 14th of December, will you be arguing that Australia is not the appropriate legal forum for this litigation to be heard in?
That's exactly right. So that's the length and breadth of what's going to be argued on the 14th. We won't be at that stage arguing about whether or not what Bruce said was right or not right, but we will be arguing that Australia's not the right place for this argument to occur.
What do you say to the argument that, look, we live in a globalised world and, you know, if people are going to put stuff out there on the internet, it's going to be downloaded across the world, then, well, it's up to, in that same globalised world, people will take you up and hold you accountable in whatever jurisdiction they feel fit.
There's a few arguments in response, and one argument that I think certainly has some significance is a question of, do we want our courts, which are expensive resources, clogged up by two foreigners essentially battling it out here in Australia? So you have a judge and a whole bunch of court officers sitting around for what ultimately will be a lengthy court case, and it's the New South Wales taxpayer who's paying for that exercise. And the other thing is, if you're a defendant and you choose a particular place for, you know, your residence, etc., and you have a wide number of readers in that jurisdiction, then maybe that's a more appropriate place for the litigation to continue. And should I point out that there's nothing preventing other parties from suing for the damage that they suffer in New South Wales in another jurisdiction. So you can sue in England, for example, for the damage you suffer in England and in New South Wales. So essentially a one-stop shop. And I guess what we're saying is, in this case, New South Wales is not the right one-stop shop.
Damien Sturzacker, lawyer for Bruce Everiss, who posted a series of blogs with titles like Don't Play Evony and Is Evony Malware? In court, Damien Sturzacker will also be arguing that at the time of their publication, Evony was not a registered company. Sturzacker says the company only incorporated in Delaware in July 2009. While Evony's lawyer, Sydney solicitor Dean Groundwater, would not come onto the program, we did have a telephone conversation. He says that because there is a preliminary court hearing in early December, it would be inappropriate to discuss or comment at this point on why Evony has chosen to sue in Australia. He confirms Evony has less than 10 employees internationally. And he also told me that the company is suing Bruce Everiss in the New South Wales Supreme Court for alleged damage done to its reputation worldwide, not just the damage sustained here in Australia. He made the point that Evony has a considerable number of players in Australia and could establish that Bruce Everiss has a considerable number of readers in Australia. This is the Law Report on ABC Radio National. I'm Damien Carrick. Today we're looking at a case that could be described as libel tourism. Melbourne barrister Matt Collins is an expert in internet defamation. He describes the Evony Everiss litigation as an attempt to stretch Australian law. He thinks this is the first time that a foreign corporation has tried to sue a foreigner in an Australian court and to hold that foreigner accountable to Australian standards of defamation.
Well, it remains to be seen what the New South Wales Supreme Court will do with the case, but there are certainly precedents. There have been a number of cases, both in Australia, but more so in England, where courts have grappled with the outer limits of their jurisdictional power. The leading Australian case is Joseph Gutnik's case. Joe Gutnik, the president of the Melbourne Football Club at the time, well-regarded businessman and philanthropist, was the subject of a 7,000-word article in an American news magazine, Barron's, published by the Dow Jones Organization. So a magazine and an online presence in the United States. Mr. Gutnik, a plaintiff in Victoria, sued in Victoria, and his case was allowed to proceed.
Now, this was a worldwide online publication. How many subscribers were there in Australia?
Well, it was a business magazine, so there was both a hard copy edition and an online edition. Of the hard copy edition, there were 305,563 copies worldwide. 14 of those were sold in Victoria. And of the online database, there were about 550,000 subscribers to the Dow Jones website, about 300 of which were in Victoria. So very small numbers in proportional terms. Nonetheless, in the case of Mr. Gutnik, a resident of Victoria, a man who enjoys a reputation in Victoria, the court said he could have access to the Victorian court system for the purpose of vindicating his reputation.
Because this is where he lives, this is where he does business, this is where his reputation is.
Quite. And more than that, he said, "I am only suing in respect of the people who read this article in Victoria. It's their opinions of me that matters to me, and it's that damage that I seek to vindicate."
Now, I've been speaking with the lawyers for Evony, and they tell me that they are seeking damages for the defamation worldwide, not just for the defamation or the damages they've sustained here in Australia. Are they able to do that?
On the assumption that that's right, that would be the first time, to my knowledge, that someone has attempted to claim worldwide damages in an Australian court in respect of something published online. If the court were to allow them to proceed, it would certainly stretch and expand our understanding of jurisdictional concepts. To the best of my knowledge, such a claim has not been allowed anywhere in either England or Australia.
Really, really. So courts also in the UK and in Australia have not allowed actions for damage worldwide?
Not to my knowledge. In all of the cases which have tested this area of the law, the plaintiff, the person suing, has carefully confined their claim to damages to publications which have occurred within the jurisdiction of the court.
Barrister Matt Collins. Blogger Bruce Everiss is not the only publisher who has upset Evony. The London-based Guardian newspaper has also been receiving some terse correspondence from Evony's Australian lawyers. This followed the publication in July of an article about Evony. The article is still available at The Guardian online. It has many of the same allegations contained in Bruce Everiss's blog, and like Bruce, connects Evony with Chinese business interests. Jill Phillips is the Director of Editorial Legal Services with The Guardian.
The Guardian published an article that had a number of similar allegations to Bruce's blog, and as a result we received a letter of claim from a firm of Australian lawyers threatening us with action in New South Wales. And so it's a very strange situation for a British newspaper to be threatened with being sued in New South Wales by an American company.
What was your response to the threat of legal action in Australia over this article?
Well, I wrote back to the firm of solicitors, who I believe are the same firm that are acting against Bruce Everiss, basically questioning the jurisdiction aspects, as well as making comments on the substantive nature of the article, which I'm not intending to go into today. I'm just saying that I had understood from the case that did take place in Australia a few years ago, Dow Jones and Gutnik, that the court would look quite closely at the connection and reputation of the claimant, and that as far as I could tell, this claimant had very little connection with New South Wales. And I've never really had what I consider to be a satisfactory answer back on that point.
Now the UK is known as the defamation capital, or London is known as the defamation capital of the world. The Sunday Times recently reported on a number of cases where defamation actions have been brought in British courts, where the connection between the parties and the UK is to some degree tenuous.
Yes, I think that's probably right. I mean, the most recent one that's been reported, partly because it went off on a slight tangent, was a case involving an Icelandic professor who was sued by a wealthy compatriot for posting remarks on a website of the University of Iceland. And that case has ended up in the UK when the Icelandic compatriot, I think, came over to the UK. And I think he moved to England in 2003, and he filed a claim against this chap in the High Court. So it's a very bizarre world when you get two Icelandic individuals suing over something on a website in Iceland. But nonetheless, the courts in that case initially accepted jurisdiction. And there was, I think, a default judgment against the claimant, which he then challenged. And it ended up with a very, very bizarrely with the British Foreign Office being sued for negligence because they allegedly failed to serve the papers properly. And of course, there have been other cases. There are other cases going on at the moment. I think a Greek citizen who's suing the New York Times in London.
I understand that there's a Palestinian politician, a Mr. Mohammed Dahlan, who claims that he was libelled on a political debate program which was broadcast on Al Jazeera.
And that's right, in Arabic.
In Arabic. And he claims that he has a reputation in the UK, and the discussion was in fact recorded in the UK, and he's sued in UK courts.
Yes, that's right. So, you know, the position is very bizarre. And I mean, there have been a couple of other quite bizarre cases where Luchansky against The Times, which was back at the beginning of 2001, and Polanski against Vanity Fair, in both those cases, the claimant, in Luchansky's case, the claimant actually had a Home Office ban and wasn't allowed to come to the country, but was allowed to get a six-day visa to come and sue. And Polanski actually couldn't come to the UK because of his problems with US justice, and he gave his evidence by video link from Paris, again, in a UK court. So there have been a number of, you know, bizarre, the cases get more and more strange.
Now, Matt Collins, there was another case involving UK courts that was involving the Russian oligarch Berezovsky.
Yes, it's a terrific case, really, where two Russian businessmen again sued Dow Jones, the American publisher, in England, in relation to an article that had appeared in Forbes magazine, which is an American business magazine. In that case, there were about 785,000 copies of the magazine in circulation. 13 of them had been sold in Russia, and 1,915 of them had been sold in England. And so they sued. They confined their claim, just as Mr. Gutnick did, saying all we want is damages for the damage to our reputations which has occurred in England by reason of copies of the magazine being available in England. And one of the judges, in considering the matter, said, well, it's a very strange circumstance. These Russian businessmen haven't sued in America, where most of the magazines were circulated, because they would probably lose there, and they would lose there because of the American guarantee of freedom of speech. But then the judge said, they've chosen not to sue in Russia for an equally strange reason, because it might be thought that they would be too likely to win there, because of questions about the reliability and integrity of the Russian judicial system. So in the end, the English court said it was not inappropriate for them to be allowed to maintain their case in England. So it was a real case of libel tourism of the kind we've been discussing. But note, they confined their case to the distribution of magazines occurring within England itself.
We tend to be talking about very rich people here, Matt. That there was another case involving a Saudi multimillionaire, a Mr. Yusuf Jamil.
Yeah, Mr. Jamil has tested the law in England in a series of cases now, which are developing the law in interesting ways. And Mr. Jamil was accused of being a donor to the Al-Qaeda terrorist network, and his name had appeared on a list called the Golden Chain List. And again, poor old Dow Jones, the American publisher, who seems to be the defendant in most of these cases, had set up on their website a hyperlink to the Golden Chain List on which Mr. Jamil's name appeared. And Mr. Jamil sued Dow Jones in England. What was interesting about that case was it turned out that only five or six individuals could be shown to have accessed the Golden Chain List via the Dow Jones website. So it was not a case of mass publication, as when your name is plastered on the front page of the Sydney Morning Herald or the Canberra Times. And the court in that case said, well, having regard to the fact that there were only five or six people who saw the list, and some of those people were naturally associated with Mr. Jamil himself, and so wouldn't think any less of him as a result, it was an abuse of process of the court, an abuse of the processes of the court, to allow him to sue in respect of such a minor slur upon his reputation, having regard to the number of people who had seen the list.
They made comments, didn't they, about the expense that would go into this litigation. bore no relevance to the actual sort of damages which had been sustained.
Yes, that's exactly what influenced the decision of the Court of Appeal. The court clearly thought it was a disproportionate use of court resources, which are already stretched in all sorts of ways, to allow a Saudi national access to England's courts against an American publisher where only five people could be shown to have seen the offending material.
Barrister Matt Collins. As we've heard, the United States is a less plaintiff-friendly jurisdiction than the UK, and this has led to a lot of cross-Atlantic libel tourism. Brian Murchison, a professor at the Washington and Lee University School of Law in Virginia, says American courts and legislatures are mightily unimpressed. They don't think their citizens and their publications should be at the mercy of overseas legal systems that have weaker free speech protections.
That's right. The rules are just different there. And a plaintiff in the UK is not going to have to face all of the First Amendment protections that defendants get in the US.
And I understand that some jurisdictions in the USA even say, look, we're not going to enforce judgments obtained in UK courts. The idea being that it's not fair on somebody who's based in the US to have to comply with the requirements of a foreign legal system when they're so different from those in the US.
Yeah, and also that the courts themselves don't want to be complicit in that undertaking. It's of great concern. In fact, the current Congress is considering legislation right now on that.
So if Congress goes ahead and enacts legislation, what would be the effect of that legislation on libel tourism?
I think it would be a significant rule about non-enforceability of foreign judgments that are quote-unquote repugnant to the American jurisprudence.
Very interesting, very interesting.
It is interesting. So when I look at the case that you were talking about, this case of Evony versus Everest, the first thing I wonder is whether the plaintiff in that case that's being filed in Australia thinks that he can enforce the judgment even in Australia. Does that defendant have assets in Australia? If not, is this plaintiff, if he wins, going to try to get it enforced, you know, in the UK or in the US or someplace else?
Bruce Everiss, how do you feel about being sued for defamation in an Australian court?
Well, I'm really quite amused that these people have gone to these measures. You know, there's a perfectly good court here in London, and they say that they're an American company. Well, then why not sue me in America, where they say they are based and where most of their players are and where most of my readers are. I'd be very happy to see them in an American court.
It would still be inconvenient for you, though, in an American court as opposed to a British court, yeah?
Yeah, but the Americans have far more greatly entrenched free speech in their constitution.
Than do, say, either the English or the Australians.
That's right. In English and Australian law is really very, very old-fashioned. And basically, it was designed to protect rich people in big houses from the gossip of their servants.
The last word there from UK blogger Bruce Everiss, who is being sued by a US-registered company in the Supreme Court of New South Wales. That's the Law Report for this week. A big thanks to producer Anita Barrow and to technical producer Paul Penton. I'm Damien Carrick. Talk to you next week with more law.